Well, it's caravan weather, isn't it? Sun is shining, you know, and it's that holiday season. And I know there's no point in me talking to you this morning because everybody who has a caravan, that's where they are this weekend. They're not in church, all right? But it is caravan weather, you know. But the question about caravan weather is always, which kind of caravan? See, I could never persuade my family into a touring caravan, no matter how hard I tried. Year after year, I used to drag them around the dealers and we would look at vans and I would get excited and they would be totally unexcited and think, like, it's hard enough having to put up with each other in a large house. How would we put up with each other in a ridiculously small metal box while it pours with rain for 2 or 3 weeks of the summer? So, Dad, no, okay? So I could never persuade them into it, you know? And yet what I noticed about my children was that they seemed to enjoy going to the caravan belonging to their friends' parents, which looks something much more like this. Now, those kinds of caravans are really weird. Why did I say that? Well, they're weird because they have wheels and they have the necessary chassis to hitch them to a vehicle with a tow bar. But now, more and more, they look like permanent homes. I mean, look at them. They've got pitched roofs, okay? They've got permanent domestic services, i.e. plumbing, okay, and electricity. And they've got decking. They look like houses, okay? Though they have wheels, they're going nowhere. Well, until the park manager decides they're too old to fit in with the cool image they want to convey, and then they're taken off for scrap. A vehicle meant to go, but now is one which is meant to stay. No longer on tour, but static. And I believe that Jesus is challenging us about this as a church. Not that we should all buy touring caravans, okay? So fear not, that's not where the sermon is going, or for that matter, static ones either. To conclude our theme for this year, which has been the theme face to face, we're going to look over the rest of July and August at some awkward conversations that people had with Jesus. Conversations in which Jesus says some things you might not expect. And today I want to look at a conversation between Jesus and largely Peter. Some of the other disciples are present, but it's probably Peter who was the lead person here. The memories in these verses that we read a moment or two ago are almost certainly Peter's memories. I say that because of what happened the night before the story I just read, one of the most moving moments in Jesus' early ministry. Previous day was the Sabbath, and Jesus had been in the synagogue in Capernaum. This is the very synagogue that he would have preached in that day. His teaching stunned the worshipers, but while he was in the process of teaching, he was interrupted by a man with an impure spirit who cried out in the middle of the meeting. And Jesus silenced the impure spirit and healed the man. And the news of what he did in Capernaum that day spread like wildfire. When he got home after the service was over to Peter's house, Peter's mother-in-law was ill with a fever. And it says in Mark chapter 1 that Jesus, when he came to the house, took the woman by the hand, lifted her up, and healed her. And the healing was instantaneous and total, so much so that she prepared the supper that Jesus ate with his friends later on that evening. And once it grew dark and the Sabbath was at an end, we read this. That evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door. He healed them all. And I'm pretty sure that everybody who lived in Capernaum was late in bed that night. There was a lot of celebrating, a lot of conversations, a lot of dancing in the streets till the wee small hours in the village of Capernaum that evening. Then in the wee small hours, the text says the last watch of the night, which was between 3 and 6 a.m., Jesus, who must have been dog-tired, gets up and goes to a solitary place to pray. You've got to remember that the home in Capernaum where he had supper with his friends and where he slept for the few small hours of sleep that he got that night was a one-roomed house. Most of the houses in Capernaum were built in groups of four around a shared courtyard. There was nowhere in the house or outside the house to get a private space where Jesus could be on his own with his Father. The only way that he could do that was to get up in the dark and go out to some remote place. The word in Matthew's gospel means desert. It probably wasn't a desert. It's just a solitary place, some distance from the village itself, where Jesus could finally be on his own with his Father. The way that the text is written hints at the fact that when Jesus left the house to go to pray, it was nearer to 3 than it was to 6. It was still dark. And he went out nearer to 3 rather than to 6 because by 6 it would have been light. And as soon as day dawned in Capernaum, people got up and went to their work. So the only really quiet time, the only silent moments of the night were in those dark hours between 3 and maybe 5 o'clock. The imperfect tense of the verb that Mark uses indicates that Jesus was praying there for quite a while. Meanwhile, as the day breaks, Peter wakens from his sleep and he looks around and Jesus isn't there. The way that Mark tells the story, he uses an unusual expression about what Peter did when he woke up that day. And that expression indicates the sense of urgency in Peter's voice as Peter told the story. They didn't expect to wake up and find Jesus absent. They expected to wake up and find Jesus still fast asleep because they knew he was exhausted the night before. And when they woke and he wasn't there, they were really upset and worried. Why is he not here? Where has he gone? So he, Peter, and probably Andrew, James, and John go out with him to look for Jesus. And when they leave to look for Jesus, dawn has already broken and half the village is at the door of the house. So they finally track Jesus down with news of the phenomenal success of the night before. The text says, Simon and his companions went to look for Jesus, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you. Everyone is looking for you." Now, that expression that they use was not a kind of just simply stating the facts. It was also a kind of an allegation. You know the way it is that if somebody offered to help you to do a job and you started the job and they didn't show up and you had half the job done before they did show up and you would maybe say to them as they came around the corner and made their final appearance, you'd say to them, "Where have you been?" By which you are not asking a question, you are making a statement. You're saying, "I've been here for the last 2 hours slaving away at this. I mean, where have you been?" So it's a kind of an accusation. It's not really a question. And similarly, whenever Peter comes to Jesus and says to him, "Everyone is looking for you," Peter really means something like, "So what are you doing hiding here? Have you any idea of how many people are at my front door right now?" That's what he really meant. It was a soft rebuke. There's a whole pile of people down there need to see you, and you're out here on your own. Doing what exactly? And Jesus' reply to Peter in the conversation was stunning. This is what he said. He said, "Let's go somewhere else." Okay, just get this for a minute. Peter says, "Everyone is looking for you." Jesus says, "Let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." Let's go somewhere else. That was not the response that Peter was expecting. And in that response that Jesus gives, there are two things that we need to note. This is the first of the awkward conversations between Jesus and people we're going to look at over the next number of weeks. Don't worry, I'll get back to the caravan eventually. It's coming. The two things I want you to note about this response that Jesus makes to Peter. Here's the first thing. First of all, I want you to notice what Jesus didn't have a problem with. what Jesus didn't have a problem with. At this time, Capernaum probably had a population of around 1,500 people, which means, let's say, that only 1 in 20 of them were sick the previous night. Even if it was only 1 in 20, that means that Jesus healed 75 people that night at Peter's front door. And if you think of the sheer numbers involved, and it may have been a higher number than that, no doubt the word had got around the area and people were now at the door from the surrounding countryside as well as the village itself looking for Jesus to heal them too. And when Jesus says, as he said in that expression a moment or two ago, let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I have come. Some commentators imply that Jesus realized that the healing ministry could become a distraction from what he had really come to do. And what he had really come to do was to preach. Is this what the text means? Jesus was saying, I didn't come to heal, I came to preach. We need to get away from here because if I stay here, I'll be doing nothing but healing people. Is that what Jesus was really saying? The reality is that in the mind of Jesus and that of the crowd, the two were the one thing. The teaching ministry that Jesus came to be involved in and the healing ministry that sat alongside it, these two things were the one thing. In Jesus' mind and in the mind of the people who lived in Galilee the previous day in that same synagogue in Capernaum where Jesus had healed the man who had an impure spirit. After he had performed the healing in the Capernaum synagogue that day, we read that the people said this. It says, the people were all so amazed that they asked each other, what is this? A new teaching. And with authority, he even gives orders to impure spirits, and they obey him. News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. The people who were in the synagogue that day, who heard Jesus teach and saw him cast the demon out of the man with the impure spirit, realized the two were the one thing. That the casting out of the demon represented an authoritative stamp upon the teaching ministry of Jesus. What kind of teaching is this, they said? With authority. Nobody else we know teaches like this. Back up their words with actions. They understood that the preaching and the healing were the one ministry. And when Jesus does leave Capernaum later that day and goes to the neighboring villages, here's what we read about his ministry. So he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. So even when Jesus went to the other villages to preach, he didn't just preach. He preached and he cast out demons. He taught and he healed. The two things went intimately together. Later in Mark's gospel, Jesus visits Jericho. And there's a blind man sitting beside the road. His name is Bartimaeus. And he shouts out for Jesus' help, and people rebuke him and said, be quiet, Jesus hasn't got time to be bothered with you. Don't be shouting out like that, you're causing a stir. Be quiet, be silent. But Jesus stops, he sends for Bartimaeus, and he heals him. Time and again, we see Jesus choosing to minister in this way. It was not a distraction. It was part of the ministry he came to exercise. Teaching and healing go perfectly together. You see it over and over again. In the New Testament church, there was hardly a greater teacher than Paul. And yet we read about Paul in Acts 19 when he was ministering in Ephesus. God did extraordinary miracles through Paul so that even handkerchiefs and aprons that had touched him were taken to the sick and their illnesses were cured and evil spirits left them. Handkerchiefs and aprons were Paul's working clothes. Remember, he was a tent maker and he wore aprons to protect his clothing from the dyed materials that he worked with. They were his working dudes. And when he didn't wear them because he was out teaching, they managed to get a hold of them. They took them to people and touched the people with them, and the people were healed. Healing was an integral part of the teaching ministry of the Apostle Paul. Not only so, but what about Peter, a key leader in the early days of the church in Jerusalem and the church's spokesman before the authorities time and time again? Yet we read about Peter in Acts chapter 5. As a result, people brought the sick into the streets and laid them on beds and mats so that at least Peter's shadow might fall on some of them as he passed by, and the people on whom the shadow fell were healed. This is a key leader of the church in teaching and defending the faith before the authorities was part of what he did, but part of what he did as well was he was involved in a healing ministry. Jesus never saw signs and wonders as a distraction, and neither should we. Neither should we. You know, it's thrilling that you are here today to worship and to hear God's word. But it would be just as valid if you were here today to be healed, because you had heard that the power of God is here too, as well as his word. You know, if Jesus had been coming here today to conduct our 10 o'clock service, who would you have gone to get to bring with you so that Jesus could touch their life and heal them? Who would you have gone to get? And why didn't you go to get them to bring them here anyway? That night at Peter's door in Capernaum, from all over the village, they gathered up anybody they knew was sick and they got them to Jesus. Isn't that what we're being challenged to do? Jesus doesn't have a problem with a healing ministry sitting alongside a teaching ministry. To Jesus, those two things are the one thing. To be the church of Jesus Christ is not only to be the place where you can learn and come to know what the gospel says, it is where you can experience the power of what the gospel does. Jesus didn't go elsewhere because he wanted to get away from a healing ministry. He went elsewhere because elsewhere there were people who needed to be healed. Who should you have brought here today? An awkward conversation. The first thing was to see what Jesus didn't have a problem with. But then we need to notice, secondly, what Jesus did have a problem with. When Peter came to Jesus with the news about the people outside the door, he was shocked by what Jesus said. Let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I have come. Somewhere else? Why would Jesus want to do that when so many had already been helped and so many more were at the door? The crowd certainly didn't want Jesus to leave. In fact, in the version of this story that you can find in Luke's Gospel chapter 4, it says this: at daybreak, Jesus went out to a solitary place. The people were looking for him, and when they came to where he was, they tried to keep him from leaving them. Something incredible was happening in Capernaum, and the people who lived in the village and the surrounding countryside didn't want it to stop. They wanted Jesus to stay there with them and have this wonderful thing in their midst. The problem was that Jesus lived his life out of a sense of mission. He lived a sent life. When he says to Peter, look, I can't stay here. I need to move on, because he said, that is why I have come. He had a sense of mission. He was a sent person. And the context of that mission was not to make Capernaum a heaven on earth. The community Jesus came to form wasn't a static caravan. It was a touring caravan. It was a people on the move. The people in Capernaum quite understandably wanted Jesus to stay. Make this the place. Let the whole country come to here if they like, but don't you dare leave, Jesus. We want to keep you here. We want to keep this thing going on. They wanted Jesus to settle down, to put some decking around the front of the van and not leave. And for 2,000 years of the church's existence, this has been one of the greatest temptations that Jesus' caravan community have faced: to become a static rather than a tourer. And the more of his truth and his power we have, the greater is the temptation to settle down. And the more of his truth and his power that we experience, the more our prayers are all about getting Jesus to stay here among us. And we have this awkward conversation with Jesus in which we tell him about all the people here and all the needs of the people here. And Jesus says, let's go somewhere else. We were meant to be a community on the move. We were never meant to become settled down into some static kind of existence where interesting and exciting and enjoyable experiences take place among us here, but they never touch the community out there, and they never touch the culture of our society, and they never touch the world in our generation. It's just Jesus and us in a comfortable circle in our static caravan in the sunshine. See, the people who most desperately need to know the truth and the power of God are the people who are not here today. The people in your work, the people in your street, the people in your family, the people you know who are not here today, they are the people who most desperately need to hear and experience the saving and healing power of Jesus Christ. And today Jesus says, let's go to them. Let's go to them. We have lost this, the obligation to go. That's what Jesus had the problem with. He didn't have a problem with the fact that healing took up a lot of his time. It was part of his ministry. It should be part of the ministry of the church. And if there are people in your life that you would get to Jesus, if Jesus were here this morning, then you need to get those people to church, to the prayer ministry team, to the act of worship where they can experience and come into a knowledge of the power of Christ. Jesus doesn't have a problem with that. What he does have a problem with is when the community of his people that he came to form want to keep Jesus inside the community, want to keep Jesus to ourselves, want to keep him in this place when Jesus came to touch the lives of all the people who don't come here. We have an obligation to go. We are not a static caravan. We are a touring caravan. We are meant as the people of God to constantly be on the move towards people who are not currently among us. March 1929, the work of the China Inland Mission was in trouble. There had been a civil war in China and had dislocated much of the work of the mission and left 12 missionaries dead. And so the general director of the mission at that time put out an appeal. Seemed a crazy time to do it. But at that time when China was in such disarray and the mission had been dislocated all across the country and some of their key missionaries were dead, killed in the Civil War, the general director of the mission put out an appeal for 200 new workers for China in the next 2 years. It was a stunning target. It was like it was just unimaginable that it would be possible to meet it. That was in March 1929. By December 1931, those 200 new workers were on the field in China. And at the AGM of the mission in May 1931, they sang a hymn that had been written by one of the great leaders of the CIM, Bishop Frank Houghton. A hymn that he had written to encourage this new move forward that the mission felt called to under God at that time. That new move forward that had summoned these 200 new workers, found the finances, and made the arrangements to get them on the field in China within 2 years. The first verse of that hymn goes like this: facing a task unfinished that drives us to our knees, a need that undiminished rebukes our slothful ease. We who rejoice to know you, renew before your throne the solemn pledge we owe you to go and make you known. The solemn pledge we owe you to go and make you known. The people who need to be in our Alpha courses this autumn and spring are not here this morning, but they are out there in your world. The children who need to be in our Sunday school are not here this morning, but they are out there in your world. And Jesus says to us this morning that he has a problem with that. Jesus has a problem with that. That the people who most need to hear and the people who most need to experience the power and grace of God are not here, but they are out there in your world and mine. And the question is, why are they not here? Jesus said to the disciples, let's go somewhere else. Let's go touch some other lives. We can't uproot this building, put wheels on it, and take it somewhere else. That's not possible. It's stuck here. But this building can become a place where people can come. It can become the door outside Peter's house. It can become the place where the world comes to experience. But for that to happen, then you and me have to go. We have to realize that Jesus has a problem with the way we have been living as a people.